Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Thursday, June 6, 2024. A senior clergy in the Catholic Church says the government of South Sudan has forgotten its supporters.
Soon after independence, it seemed the relationship went very lukewarm. They were unable, referring here to the government leaders, they were unable to listen to the call for peace, a call to reconciliation.
And the United Nations says families in Sudan and South Sudan should prepare for the worst.
In several hunger hotspots, we find that armed conflict and violence is a main driver of food insecurity. Then what we see in terms of climate-related drivers, La Niña can be considered as increasing food insecurity.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Civic leaders, activists, and the head of the Catholic Church in South Sudan warn the country is in crisis because the government of South Sudan does not listen to advice from its traditional allies. Dennis Longonyi reports for VOA from Juba.
Cardinal Stephen Ameyu Mula says the Catholic Church stood by side of the former rebels of the Sudan People's Liberation Army and movement during the country's 21 years of civil war. He says that partnership changed from 2011.
Soon after independence, it seemed the relationship went very lukewarm. They were unable, referring here to the government leaders, they were unable to listen to the call for peace, a call to reconciliation, a call of understanding ourselves in this country. Even our democratic governance is very fragile at even the grassroots level.
Speaking at a roundtable discussion in Juba Thursday, Ameyu says the government of South Sudan should learn from the history of the country's struggle and sacrifices made by South Sudanese to gain independence from Sudan.
We have forgotten what we fought for, that is freedom and human rights. Many of our elites in Juba do not see those problems as they are part. They use those conflicts in our countryside to maintain power and increase personal wealth, neglecting state institutions and national identity.
Aya Irene, the executive director for the Association for Media Development in South Sudan, says civic space is shrinking across the country.
We also have environment where journalists are not free to move around, go and interview people, maybe on the street and even in the market. That is very important because the opinion of people is very important. So if journalists do not have that access, how will we know what the people want?
Lars Peter Heni, the deputy ambassador of Norway to South Sudan, is calling on the Juba government to prove its critics wrong.
I'm afraid we are now again in a situation where civil society, the churches and independent media find themselves in a difficult transition. And this country has been in transition for a very long time, and it has not transitioned into what we had expected. There is still a risk that autocratic rule will continue, that instability will continue, and that the conflict at South Sudan will continue to be the poorest country on the planet.
Boboya James is the executive director of the Institute for Social Policy and Research. He says South Sudan is at a crossroad.
South Sudan is very stuck right now. So we want to make sure that we contribute to getting South Sudan out of the wood, because the challenge that are facing South Sudan, for example, you've seen right now that the economy is not doing well. So the issues to do with the realization of civic rights of people, you know, political rights, economic rights, and social rights are more basic issues that South Sudan want to see what's something happening.
The South Sudan Council of Churches and the Institute of Social Policy and Research organized the two-day roundtable to promote democratic governance and civic engagement in South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Longonyi reporting from Juba.
From Juba, we move to Eastern Equatoria State, where authorities are investigating an incident of domestic violence in Lafon County after a man committed suicide and his wife was found dead. Relatives of the deceased say the man allegedly beat his wife and broke her neck during a fight. Eastern Equatoria State Government condemned the incident, saying excessive consumption of alcohol has affected communities across the state. For VOA News, Kaltuma Vanessa reports from Torit.
Onyango Omojo, a relative of the deceased man, says the couple fought at night and neighbors were unable to intervene and defuse the conflict.
At that time, he happened to beat the wife. And then accidentally, the wife falls in the head and she got some problems, dislocation, all broken to the neck. Then she took the wife inside. They slept without knowing that the wife has a severe problems. So in the morning when he wanted to go to the farm, he was trying to wake the wife and he realized that the wife vomit the blood and he knew that the wife has problems. So he started taking the rope. The neighbor came to him and consoled. When he was already up the tree, he told the neighbor that you see my wife inside. As the neighbor entered into the house, then he released himself from the tree.
Augustine Lijok, administrator of Libure Village in Lafon County, says the police are investigating the incident.
I follow up. Then before we met one of the policemen, he was telling me that the brigadier, the general brigadier, was following the details. So because it happened at 8 and no one even had evidence what was the cause of the problem that caused occurring of this fighting. So now we are still looking up. What was the cause of the problem, because it is in an individualist complex. You may look at it as a family affair. So but the problem now, what was the cause of that? Because I told you before that this case is.
Study indicates that communities affected by armed conflict are at higher risk of alcohol and substance abuse. Authority in Eastern Equatoria State say many families are struggling to address the root cause of domestic violence. Idua Dominica is the Director General of Gender, Child and Social Welfare. She says domestic violence is common across the state due to excessive consumption of alcohol.
People have taken alcohol as a consoling factor that can console their problems. And yet alcohol is going to turn all whatever they're thinking into negative. Alcohol always takes you somewhere. When you realize yourself after a few hours, you're already at wrong. We know all that and it's happening every day in every family.
Idua is urging the State Ministry of Local Government to control the production and consumption of alcohol in communities across the state. A 2016 study by the nonprofit Women for Women International indicates alcohol is deeply embedded in the culture and is historically consumed during cultural and religious ceremony across South Sudan. The study found that many women in female-headed household engage in the production and sale of locally produced alcohol. South Sudan, local drinks like eregi, kwete, sukusuku are consumed by men and women in many communities in South Sudan. The percentage of alcohol in South Sudan's local drinks are not known. South Sudan National Ministry of Health is yet to introduce treatment resources for substance abusers. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa reporting from Torit, Eastern Equatorial State.
From Torit, we move to Sudan, where the Food and Agriculture Organization and the World Food Program have warned that acute food insecurity will likely worsen in 17 countries, including Sudan and South Sudan. Nebel Biagio reports with audio from the Associated Press.
The latest hunger hotspots report from the United Nations says climate warming and conflicts could soon worsen hunger and food insecurity in 17 countries. The Food and Agriculture Organization, or FAO, and the World Food Program, or WFP, released the document on Wednesday. It shows acute food insecurity is expected in Mali, the Palestinian territories, South Sudan, and Sudan from now through October. Flor Wouters is deputy director at FAO's Office of Emergencies and Resilience. She was speaking in Rome on Wednesday.
In several hunger hotspots, we find that armed conflict and violence is a main driver of food insecurity. Then what we see in terms of climate-related drivers La Niña can be considered as a as increasing food insecurity, particularly in southern Africa. Not so much in terms of, there can be two effects, essentially. So there's abundant rainfall expected, which, of course, is going to help farmers farm. But at the same time, this level of rainfall is associated with increased risk of flooding, which may affect food insecurity.
Excessive rains and extreme weather are feared to worsen the food situation in several countries. According to the UN report, La Niña, the natural temporary cooling of the equatorial Pacific Ocean that alters world weather patterns, is expected to cause abundant rains from August 2024 to February 2025. Haiti is also listed as an area at risk due to escalating violence by armed non-state groups. The populations of countries in conflict with already limited food supplies, such as in Sudan and Gaza, also face reduced access to humanitarian aid, says Guterres.
At the highest level of concern, we have Mali, Palestine, Sudan, and South Sudan. Haiti was also added as an area of the highest concern. Areas of very high concern are the Democratic Republic of Congo, Myanmar, the Syrian Arab Republic, and Yemen.
According to the report, 1 million people, or half of the population of the Gaza Strip, quote, face death and starvation by mid-July, end quote, because of Israel's war against the Hamas militants who control Gaza. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
Listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, mental health is a common problem in conflict-affected communities. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Many Israeli and Palestinian children are suffering from severe trauma because of the October 7 attack on Israel and ensuing 8 months of war between Israel and Hamas. Therapists on both sides say the effects could be long-term for these most vulnerable members of society. Linda Gradstein reports from Jerusalem.
Erez and Sahar Calderon were among dozens of children whom Hamas kidnapped and took to Gaza on October 7th. They were released after 52 days in Hamas captivity, although their father is still a hostage. Their mother, Hadass, says her children still suffer from trauma 6 months after their release and worry terribly about their father.
My children can't sleep. They're terrified. Their father is coming.
My children can't sleep. They're terrified. Their father is coming in their dreams. He comes and says and screams, please don't forget me. They came back. They're still there. They're still in the 7th of October. They live it every day. They never feel safe. They're afraid from strangers. They believe the terrorists will come again.
They believe the terrorists will come again.
Israeli trauma experts say they are struggling to contend with the unique traumatic experience of the Hamas invasion and the displacement of more than 200,000 people from their communities near Gaza and on the northern border. Thousands of psychotherapists have been recruited by both the Israeli government and volunteer organizations to treat the traumatized children and families. Asher Ben-Aryeh is a child trauma specialist at Hebrew University in Jerusalem.
We have unfortunately, a lot of experience in shelling and in bombing and even in war victims, but we never experienced kidnapping of children. We never experienced the massacre of parents in front of their children. How do you explain to a child that he's safe now when he's seen his safest place, his bedroom, burned and his parents murdered in his house?
In Gaza, most of the 1 million Palestinian children have been traumatized by the widespread death and destruction caused by Israeli airstrikes and seeing their families killed and their homes destroyed. UN agencies estimate that more than 15,000 Palestinian children have been killed, 12,000 have been wounded, and about 19,000 orphaned during this war. Marwan Shaheen, a mother of six children living in the Nusayrat refugee camp, has been displaced four times since the war began. None of her children have been able to go to school, and her 18-year-old daughter suffers from schizophrenia but has not been able to get medicine or treatment. Shaheen says her two youngest children fear any noise and barely sleep. She says the war has destroyed them psychologically, personally, socially, health-wise, and nutrition-wise.
My ill daughter and my 9-year-old son haven't allowed me to sleep since the beginning of the war. Any sound scares them, even if it's the noise of a car, not shelling. And because they hardly sleep, they wake up very tired. The war destroyed them psychologically, personally, socially, health-wise, and nutrition-wise.
Because most of Gaza's hospitals and medical services have been destroyed, children's trauma cannot even begin to be treated until the war ends, Palestinian medical officials say. Preliminary research shows at least two-thirds of Gaza's 1 million children are suffering from trauma. Dr. Mohammed Iskafi of the Palestinian Medical Relief Society in the West Bank.
They are facing a lot of difficulties. They are suffering from signs and symptoms as a result of the continuous war and pressure on them, and the the loss of family members, the loss of houses, and so on.
Medical professionals and parents of both Israeli and Palestinian children worry that even when the war between Israel and Hamas finally ends, the emotional scars will take many years to heal. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Jerusalem.
Still on health matters, cervical cancer is the most common cancer among women in the southern African nation of Eswatini, while globally it's the fourth most common cancer. Despite this, a vaccination program in Eswatini that aims to prevent cervical cancer is meeting resistance. Nokuhanya Musi has more from Mazini, Eswatini.
A vaccination campaign in Eswatini aims to protect schoolgirls against the human papillomavirus, or HPV. The virus can lead to cervical cancer, the most common cancer among women in Eswatini. But experts say the vaccine can prevent most cases of cervical cancer if it is administered before a girl or woman is exposed. Despite this, the vaccination campaign is stirring debates among parents in the Manzini region and elsewhere in the country. Some say the government did not provide enough information when it launched the program in June 2023. Precious Shongwe is a parent and cervical cancer survivor.
I am well versed because I work in the health center, but I still feel like I have other certain questions as much as I support it, especially for other parents, because there, a lot has been said, a lot of leads that are still ongoing, and parents are not given chance to ask questions. Even the girls are also not given a chance to ask.
The Ministry of Health is running the campaign in partnership with the World Health Organization, WHO, and Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, which provides funding for vaccines for children in poor countries. Sisana Mamba, a grandmother and mother, says families in rural areas did not get the information they needed.
She says she learnt about the vaccination program from the school. The following week, she was given consent forms to fill out and sign without adequate information. She says she and other parents in rural areas signed without fully understanding the matter. But a spokesperson for the Ministry of Health says the government properly informed all communities before the vaccination drive and continues to do so. Ministry of Health Communications Officer Nsindi Sotsabedze.
We continue to educate communities. We continue to educate parents, and we engage in community dialogues in terms of the importance of taking the HPV vaccine. We also share information through various media platforms. We also use opportunities that we get during outreach, community outreach projects, where we go and give health services.
Cedric Chewa is the president of the Eswatini Schools Committee and the Parents Association, ESCAPA, as well as the father of two young children. He says the government informed head teachers but left parents out, and they have many questions that haven't been answered. As the debate continues over the HPV vaccination, the vaccination campaign continues in a bid to protect young people from HPV and lower the highest rate of cervical cancer in the world. Nokukhanya Musi, VOA News, Menzini, Eswatini.
From health, we move to politics, where the U.S. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump says he plans to appeal last week's felony convictions for falsifying business records ahead of his 2016 election. VOA correspondent Scott Stans looks at the former president's prospects for appeal and whether those convictions might be overturned before Election Day.
Donald Trump says he was wronged in a New York courtroom last week by a judge who's given him ample grounds for appeal.
So we're going to be appealing this scam. We're going to be appealing it on many different things. He wouldn't allow us to have witnesses. He wouldn't allow us to talk. He wouldn't allow us to do anything. The judge was a tyrant.
Trump was convicted on 34 counts of falsifying business records to hide payments used to illegally influence his 2016 election. Trump says the trial was rigged by backers of President Joe Biden. Biden says Trump's convictions reaffirm that no one is above the law.
Now he'll be given the opportunity, as he should, to appeal that decision just like everyone else has that opportunity. That's how the American system of justice works. And it's reckless, it's dangerous, it's irresponsible for anyone to say this was rigged just because they don't like the verdict.
On appeal, Trump attorneys may start with whether the statute used to prosecute him was overly vague, says Georgetown law professor Abby Smith.
The statute itself is so broad or ambiguous that it could cast a net too widely, and people caught up in that net wouldn't know exactly what it was they were facing, wouldn't understand what the law proscribes and what the law allows, given the wording of the statutes.
Smith says Trump's attorneys might then look at whether the trial judge allowed in evidence that he should not have, or prevented evidence from coming in for the defense that he should have allowed.
When we wanted to do things, he wouldn't let him. He wouldn't let us do those things. But when the government wanted something, they got everything. They got everything they wanted.
Trump may also appeal on the grounds of ineffective counsel.
And there, I think, perhaps defense counsel's failure to object to the testimony by Stormy Daniels suggesting that the sexual encounter between her and Mr. Trump was anything other than consensual might be fertile grounds for an appeal challenging the effectiveness of counsel.
Whatever their strategies, Trump and his attorneys are unlikely to make the appeal before his July 11 sentencing, says John Jay College of Criminal Justice professor David Shapiro.
He will likely await sentencing. That way he has, and his attorneys have, a full perspective on what exposure he faces, rather than doing it piecemeal, which, among other things, burn ups Mr. Trump's financial resources and doesn't really provide a material advantage to his case.
The appeal is unlikely to be ruled on before Election Day, says Smith.
This is not a quick process. I don't see, even if the appellate division regards this case as special and urgent because of the presidential election, I still don't see that happening before November.
If his convictions are not overturned by Election Day, Trump will be the first felon to stand for president on a major U.S. party ticket. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
If you are in Sudan witnessing events taking place there, or if you have family you are talking to there, you can call us on WhatsApp and let us know how things are going there. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. The number again, the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
That wraps up what we prepared for you this Thursday, June 6, 2024. We now leave you with the song Todie by Oliver Mtukudzi. Listening to the Zimbabwean music star Oliver Mtukudzi with the song Todie. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Jogio, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Ajiziva unangu